Eric Peters joins me, automotive journalist, libertarian car guy. Sign up for his alerts and get his free ebook, Don't Get Taken for a Ride. You can find out more about this at epautos.com. It's a site I go to practically every day. Eric, welcome back to the show. Good morning.
Good to be here, Bill.
All right. I did get the ebook title right, correct me? I did download it and
you did.
Read it the
you
other
did.
Day. And this is, for all intents and purposes, how not to be taken for a ride when you're out there, purchasing a car. And tell us a little bit about the ebook before we move on here, okay?
Well, exactly. It's just about the accumulated wisdom of my nearly 30 years doing this. Of both buying and selling cars, new and used. Just my 50 cents about the things to be careful about when you're out there shopping for a vehicle.
Okay, very good. epautos.com, 637. Now then, wanted to talk about a story you ended up writing the other day, and we're already used to, or getting used, I should say, to the real ID law, in which everybody is concerned that you be identified to the overlords at all times. And we're pretty used to carrying around a government-issued ID. It's pretty much the way it goes in order to have your road privileges. Now there is a push. There's a company that wishes to have you bioscanned into your smartphone. Is this what we're supposed to understand? This is the next new hot trend?
This is the next hot new trend, and it's being pushed by a company with the really Orwellian-sounding name of MorphoTrust, as in morphology. And what they're peddling is facial recognition software that will be used to scan your mug and then to create a digitized version of your driver's license, which will be essentially an app on your cell phone that could be scanned at any time by any authority that chooses to do so.
Okay, so it is intentionally to be scanned then?
Yes, exactly.
So you
and the really creepy thing is,
okay, well, in order to drive, then you would have to give law enforcement access to your cell phone at all times?
Well, allegedly, according to the MorphoTrust, it would not give them access to anything other than the picture of your biometrically created ear tag, so to speak. But we all know that they've got the technological capacity to access anything they want to, and this just opens the door to that. In particular, legally opens the door to that. You know, right now they don't have the legal authority necessarily to filch through your cell phone, but if your cell phone becomes your ID, then they do. It's startling how creepy and scary this is.
Isn't there already a trend at this point where somebody pulls you over and there are some police agencies that can actually take a look or demand that you show them your cell phone to see if you've been texting? Isn't there some legal authority for that now?
There already is, and they are indeed pushing for – I wrote an article about this actually a few weeks ago about another app that will allow them to determine whether you are texting at any given time so as to enforce these no texting while driving edicts. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, we kind of set the ball rolling for this when we accepted the idea that here in America we are going to be required to carry around an ID all the time and be required to present our papers to authority figures. I'm old enough to remember, you're probably old enough to remember, when Americans would look at East Germany and the Soviet Union, and those were places where you had to present your papers.
Oh, yeah, or Vichy France, papers. You know, vos papiers, s'il vous plaît. You know, those sort of situations. And yeah, and we would recognize it for the totalitarian instinct, you know, behind, underpinning all of this. And now we kind of lost that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really clear line in the sand between a free society on the one hand and a totalitarian society on the other. Americans used to be able to come and go, you know, unmolested. You could just feel like going somewhere, you could go somewhere. And unless you did something to warrant it, the authority figures didn't have any legal business, making you halt and present your papers. But now they do.
And this has filtered into all forms of travel here. And, of course, you're dealing with the automotive style of travel. Do you ever fly at all, Eric?
If not, if I can help it. I used to, for work, fly fairly frequently, but I've dialed back on that just because I can't abide having to be felt up and treated like I just, you know, was arrested for a felony and be processed as an incoming felon just to get on an airplane.
Yeah, well, my wife ended up getting the TSA, the unauthorized TSA massage. You know, when we ended up flying to Washington, D.C., we had to go to Mordor on the Republic, the Potomac, rather, a few months ago for a series of broadcasts. And we actually paid extra. I know this is a little bit, you know, aside what you were talking about, but it kind of shows the tone of travel these days. We actually paid extra for first class. And we had, and because of the next door passenger ended up spilling a Bloody Mary, you know, on the floor. So we're in first class. We're trying to clean up, and you don't get any help from the flight attendants these days, because the flight attendants have been empowered with all sorts of authority to more or less, if you look cross-eyed at them, throw you off the plane. And so here I am in first class trying to desperately clean up the area with no help from the crew at all. And I end up going up to the front of first class, where, and they had the flight attendant just barricaded the front with a cart, a food cart, so that she could talk to her friend, her other colleague there. And I'm there with my handful of dripping towels, and I say, "Could I get some help here?" And she says, "Sit down." I said, "But I need some help. Sit down." That's the attitude you get when you have this sort of a totalitarian attitude of filter through every aspect of society. All that mattered was that she told
totalitarians.
It doesn't matter that we paid an extra, you know, $400 or $500 a seat to there. That's all right. You sit down, because, you know, the Stasi up front in the airline ended up telling you to do so. See what I'm getting at? It's a whole attitude.
It's pervasive. I've got one for you too. That's related to this. I went to my bank the other day, and I've done business with this bank for 20 years. I have two accounts there. I've got my personal account and I've got my business account. And I just went in there to cash a check. And the insolent little guy behind the counter demanded my ID.
To cash a check?
Just to cash a check. Yeah, and not only, you know, I showed it to him, which is one thing, but he demanded that I actually hand it over to him so that he could write down, I don't know what numbers, but he said he had to write down some numbers.
Mm-hmm. And you were a customer, and you were cashing your own check?
Yes. I just needed some cash. I needed some walking around money.
Oh, okay. And so, what are they trying to make sure that you don't go to the little insolent thug inside the bank and that you go to the ATM only? Is that maybe what they're trying to
do? I don't know what their agenda is, but, you know, there's two elements to this. One, just as the flight attendants in your situation, they treat you with this kind of sneering contempt. They lord their authority, because after all, you know, they've got you. You're in the airplane. I need my money.
And if you defy them, then there's a cop waiting for you to throw you in jail when you get down to the other end.
Exactly.
Now, you know, and you know darn well that, you know, back in the 1960s, even the 1970s, even during the height of all that hijacking which was going on, Americans would not have tolerated that.
Never would have tolerated. And now they do. Now we've got these kind of DMV clerk type people everywhere, and they're inescapable, and they have authority, and the repercussions for, you know, defying their authority are, of course, extreme. They'll send a SWAT team out after you.
So the Morpho, you know, going back to the you know, the digitized driver's license on the smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there a need for this at this point?
There is no need for this at this point, other than to further demoralize the populace and get them that much more habituated to having their personal space invaded and to rendering the Bill of Rights, and in particular the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, rendered nullities formally.
All right. So
that's my opinion.
Is this company making headway, or is it just a proposal? They're trying to get venture capital funding, and then they'll do something like Michael Chertoff did, and, you know, ends up getting becoming a multimillionaire because of a former government contacts.
Oh, they're not only making headway, they're making book. They've partnered with, drumroll, the Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, no.
They secured a multimillion dollar bequest from them. I'm not sure what the exact term is, but they got that amount of money from DHS to develop pilot programs and implement this in several states. They're already beginning to do this in North Carolina, in Georgia, in Arizona, and Iowa. And in my opinion, you know, it's a prelude to a national system. That's how they do this. They start in one area and they just kind of build it up until it reaches a crescendo and becomes a fait accompli, and then they impose it nationally.
How can it be fought at this point, especially when you have big companies that are pushing towards the government, say, "Hey, look at this really keen way we have to, you know, to even make the American people more of an inventory, you know, like livestock. It's just the inventory. We're just inventory for the government right now."
Yeah. Well, you know, I wrestle with this a lot, and I'm sure you do as well. You know, I find it outrageous, and I, you know, I fight it in whatever way I can by writing about it and speaking about it, and also by taking action. For example, I don't fly, and if you know, I've long argued for years. If merely a third of the population essentially voted with their wallet, said, "Look, I'm not going to be treated in this manner in order to get on an airplane any longer," the thing would change. The groping and the scanning and all of that would change. If a third of the population demanded that the Fourth Amendment be respected and that people not be subject to unreasonable searches absent probable cause, the Fourth Amendment would be enforced. But unfortunately, it just seems that the majority of the population doesn't care. As long as they've got a gadget to play with and football on TV, they're perfectly content to wade ever deeper into an authoritarian police state.
I wonder if the wading into the sports, the television shows, the entertainment to death kind of trend that I see America working through. There's less of that, I think, with the talk radio people. That's one of our problems because we're actually paying attention and I think watching this stuff a little more than the typical people. Isn't it more or less a natural reaction to almost want to numb yourself when there's a part of you that really realizes what's going on? And so I'm trying not to throw my brethren citizens under the bus here for just trying to say, hey, I'm just going to try to escape this.
I think there are some like that. However, unfortunately, I think the majority are not. I think the majority have been enstupidated. I like that word. Fred Reed, my friend and expat.
Fred's
came
great.
Up with that.
Fred Reed is great. I love him. Yeah.
Me too. But I think that they have been conditioned this way. If you think about the way the schools operate, the object of government schools is not to teach people critical thinking or even to think at all. It's to inculcate social norms according to the authorities. And to develop rote memorization of whatever the current orthodoxies are. You combine that with a pop culture that is chaotic and numbing, and you end up with what another great, the fantastic comedian George Carlin once called obedient workers, and that's what the system wants.
Eric Peters, once again, automotive journalist on epautos.com. We end up talking about some great political news. I shouldn't say it's great news, but some good journalism on epautos.com. His latest here, Your Smartphone Please, the efforts of one company to get you to scan everything you are into your smartphone, and then that's your license, that's your ID, you're all digitized, and then the Department of Homeland Security is working with them on this. Francine is in talent. Francine, you're with Eric Peters. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Francine.
Well, First of all, I don't know. Some people don't have smartphones, so I don't know. And I happen to be one of them, so I don't know how they're going to try to force that on me.
Well, we'll just take the old Obama phone program and expand it to everyone, Francine.
Right, right. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is you were talking about how they were insisting that people show ID when at banks and stores and stuff like that. And I wanted to tell you that a few years back, I had bought something at Best Buy. I decided it wasn't right for me, and I went to return it, and I had purchased it with my debit card, and I presented the debit card so they can put the charges back, and they wanted to see my driver's license, and I told them no, and they said, well, we have to, and this went on, and there were people waiting in line.
Yeah, but you were returning it to the account that purchased it.
Right, right, and I would not give them my driver's license. They went and got a manager, and they went through the whole thing, and in the end, I got to return that without giving them my driver's license. Now, they knew who I was, who I am and everything. It was just kind of almost a moot point in a way, but the thing is, I just would not do it. I would not do it, and they ended up having to just go ahead and let me return my item anyways. And that's what people need to do when, if possible, they need to just say no.
I couldn't agree more. It's inconvenient. It can be embarrassing and stressful to do that. But I absolutely agree. That's what's necessary. People have to be willing to do that rather than be so passive and submissive as so many people are.
You have some other articles I wanted to mention here, too, and also a couple of reviews before we take off. And could you tell us a bit about this hair in the ride-sharing soup? Because we're also being conditioned in another aspect of things, that in the future we're not going to own cars. In fact, there have been people actually calling for this, and that we're just going to be sharing cars and ordering a car as a service. Now, I could see this working, in a pretty dense urban area. I'd see this working for some people, But how do you see this breaking up?
Well, I see it as a way for them to get around the problem of cars becoming increasingly unaffordable as a result of both government mandates and also people being willing to get into tremendous debt to have all the latest gadgets. That's driving up the typical new car loan to 7 and 8 years now. And you can't really push it much farther than that because cars depreciate. And if your loan lasts beyond a certain point, the car's worth ends up being less than what you owe on it. So they've been trying to figure out what to do about that.
You can see how there have been some stories out there. I know Wall Street Journal reporting that Ford was going to stop using conventional credit scores in order to get more people to qualify for car purchases, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're desperate to move the product. And someone came up with this great idea. Well, hey, you know what we can do? We can rent cars to people by the hour, by the day, by the week. I mean, effectively, it's like a short-term lease with no long-term commitment. That's what this whole ride-sharing thing is all about. But one of the problems with it, there are many problems with it, but the subject of this article is that if you put a car into essentially continuous service, it's out there and it's being used constantly and being driven by multiple different people every day, every week, and so on, it's going to rack up those miles pretty quickly. Most cars that are owned by private people get about 10 or 15,000 miles per year, but this is going to be like a taxi or a police car.
You can easily go 100,000. Sure, absolutely.
So what's going to happen to the value of that vehicle when it's a year or two old and has 150,000 miles on it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what happens when you make transportation strictly a service. And of course,
somebody's going to pay for that. That's the thing. You know, everybody gets gulled, or most people get gulled by this. Oh, they're going to save us money. No, I mean, the reason they're pushing this is because they see it as a way for them to make more money.
Yeah, exactly. You get $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 a month out of a vehicle rather than a $200 or $300 a month payment.
And they're going to have to fold into the cost of that, you know, the accelerated wear and tear of that mileage that accrues in that short period of time. The car's going to start to fall apart. It's going to need repairs and service. Who's going to pay for that? It's not going to be the car companies.
Yeah, indeed. 6:53. We're speaking with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Let's go to Joe. Joe's in Sam Valley. Hey, Joe. Got a question or comment on the ID?
Yes. In order to put cash back into your account, I'm thinking $20, you have to show an ID.
To put cash into
into the account. And I took cash out to keep it in case we have something go wrong with the banking system.
Uh-huh.
And I want to put it back in to cover a check. And it's a small amount, not huge. And you have to show your ID.
Wow.
I've argued about it.
So it's one thing to have to show ID to take cash out, like Eric had to.
Right.
But to put cash in is rather interesting. Don't you find that?
Yes. And you know what they said? They said because there's so much money going around that is illicit, and that's why they put that in. You have to show an ID.
Oh, Joe, you're being conditioned that we need to get rid of cash. That's other part of the meme, right?
That is exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to comment because that made me mad.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for at least recognizing as they're trying to close in on freedom-thinking people here. All right. Like I said, great journalism you have there, Eric. And before we take off, we always like to talk about some of the good things going on in the automotive world because cars in many ways have never been better, faster. And I mean, there's just all sorts of ways to look at some great things. And I liked your review on the 2017 Toyota Highlander. Pretty good vehicle overall, wasn't it?
It's a great vehicle overall, and one of the things that makes it great, in my opinion, it's one of the few vehicles in that class and generally that you could still get without one of these little turbocharged engines. And for a family vehicle, which is essentially what that is, it's something it's a crossover SUV with three rows of seating, and it can carry about eight people. So it's a car that you're going to be using to haul the family around, go on long trips, and probably put a lot of miles on it. And it's got good, reliable, durable, simple four-cylinder standard and V6 optional engines, not turbocharged four-cylinder
engines. And those Toyota V6 are pretty much bulletproof from what I'm told.
They're excellent. They're among the best engines that you can get. It's the same basic engine that they use in the Camry sedan and the Avalon sedan and also some Lexus vehicles, which, of course, Toyota probably doesn't want me to tell you. But it really is an outstanding engine. It's one of those engines that you can put 200-something thousand miles on it and never have to worry about it.
So what about the Kia? You ended up test driving a recent Kia Niro. I'm not familiar with that model.
Yeah. Nobody is, which is sad. It is a hybrid, and it is designed to not look like a hybrid or behave like one. It's a hybrid that doesn't suck gas or suck. You know, most of the hybrids that are out there are really slow. Prius, for example. Prius or Prius? I never know how to exactly pronounce that stupid thing. Well, this thing has a very high voltage, high capacity battery that's designed to make it move out. So it gets to 60 in the mid-high 7-second range versus well over 10 for the Prius. And yet it gets almost the same mileage that the Prius does, and it costs about the same, slightly more, but not that much more. It's about $22,000-$23,000 to start. And it doesn't look geeky. It doesn't drive geeky. I really like the thing.
So the Kia Niro, that's one I've not heard of until now. So, all right.
Kia's done, the only thing that's bad about the car is that Kia's done a terrible job of making people aware of it.
Okay, well, maybe we shed a little bit of that because we have a local Kia dealer. So nothing wrong with that. And you can read up on that, the various reviews, the other stories we've been talking about, and also get the free ebook, sign up, and help support the site there, too. Eric, thanks so much for being on the show. Always a pleasure.